When the hurricane hit a month ago, every grocery store here was wiped out of milk and meat. And we had some farmers who had generators, and they called and they checked in on us. And then they asked, like, what can we do for you? And I said, when we get electricity, I'm going to call you. And what you could do is come here as quickly as possible. And our electricity turned on at 6 o'clock on Monday morning. And by 9 o'clock, our milk farmer was at our dock loading milk to our store.
Welcome to Common Roots, an Infra podcast, and I'm your host, Haley Craig. Independent natural food retailers are as diverse and unique as the communities they serve. From urban to rural, East Coast to West Coast, small to large, there's one thing that these stores have in common: a deep commitment to providing healthy foods to their communities. In celebration of Infra's 20th anniversary, we're handing over the mic to 20 Infra members to share their challenges and triumphs in navigating the world of natural food retail. Are our common roots really so common? Let's find out. Today, we are joined by Mary Walsh, owner and operator of Swamp Rabbit. And this is their story. So, do you just want to start off by introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about your store?
Sure. My name is Mary Walsh, and I'm one of the owners of the Swamp Rabbit Cafe and Grocery. So we opened in 2011, and it's our mission to buy, sell, and cook with local food to support a just and sustainable food system that allows small local farmers to thrive. And so for the last 13 years, we've been very aggressively and passionately focusing on sourcing as the biggest differentiator for us. And so local is important, transparency is important to us, and just knowing what your food is made of and where it comes from is kind of our top priority in every decision that we make here. And so we're in Greenville, South Carolina. And the other little interesting tidbit about us is we are also right on a bicycle trail that pretty much opens around the same time that we opened. And so this trail has been to us a big transformer to our business, but also to our community. Because Greenville, like a lot of other cities, has grown to be very car dependent, with lots of big roads with many lanes and not as many sidewalks. So the trail has really made people have a new appreciation for the value of being able to get around safely on foot or on two wheels.
Yeah, and I saw that on your website, and I thought that was so cool. Is Greenville as a whole, has there been this large push to be more biker and walk friendly, or is it just kind of your little area?
It's definitely become a whole community thing. And this trail, it started off for the first few years as maybe just 2 miles just around downtown. But now it goes from Greenville to a community up north. Traveler's Rest is the next neighboring city. And then it also now goes south for quite a bit. And so I think ultimately, I think it'll just keep extending, and hopefully we even get to touch North Carolina one day.
Yeah, so it seems like both sustainability and walkability are kind of those key aspects of your business that have kind of influenced choosing your location and choosing to work with local farmers. So how would you say that these values kind of influence your just day-to-day operations and also your long-term goals as a business?
Well, when we opened, it was really important that we could be safely accessible by walking or biking. So it is sort of a core to who we are. And then as we grow, we have a lot of events. We have a lot of outdoor areas that I think if we were a more businessy kind of business, it would just be a parking lot. But we maintain a lot of grassy areas for people to be outside, interact with other members of their community. We have a little kids play area that is not a playground, but it's just a fenced area with toys. And parents will have lunch or have a latte, and they get to relax and have sort of a passive playing area with their kids. So these kind of like outdoor community spaces. Like some people have said, we're basically a public park. So if you can imagine a grocery store that has a public park with not like the expensive amenities of a park, but just the passive areas for people to relax and interact.
And yeah, I saw you have all of these really fun events on your website. I just was looking at that. Do you want to talk a little bit about some of those events that go on or anything that's kind of recurring that you do at Swamp Rabbit?
Yeah. Well, so during the holidays, we've started this since the year we opened. We call it the Holiday Flea, which is a holiday market where we invite local vendors to set up shop here. And customers will come and buy direct from them. Some of them are already our vendors. Like we have a local laundry detergent soap maker. They'll come and sell here, even though they sell at our store. And then we have other people who sell things that we don't really sell in our store, like jewelry or paintings or photographs. So that's just one of them. But I have another things like my mom is Chinese, but she was born in Brazil and raised in Brazil. And so we have some things in our menu that are influenced by those. And so we celebrate Lunar New Year and all the foods that come along with it. We love local ingredients. And then we also love exploring different types of foods. And so we'll also have a strawberry festival where we do whatever we can to highlight our strawberry farmers, but also highlight all the different things you can make with strawberries. We have a peach festival. So a lot of fruits and vegetable-centered things, but then also some cultural things that I think is just fun to expose people to.
And so when did you join Infra and what motivated you to initially become a member?
So we opened, and since we opened, we've just been really busy. Me and my partner, and there's two of us, we're here every day working, and there's always like some crisis happening here or some project we want to work on there. So we actually didn't really even know about Infra. And then we had an employee come who was our grocery manager who first mentioned it and talked about the benefits and convinced us to go ahead and try applying. So that's kind of how it happened, really word of mouth. And then once we joined, we ended up meeting we had already known some other grocery stores or markets. And we were surprised to learn that they were also members. And so it was kind of nice, like, oh, we're already friends with some of these people. So we joined Infra in 2021.
Okay, awesome. And then so something that I've really noticed, or how you're really known at Infra as well, is just your super interesting and detailed marketing. So I would really love to know, how have you used marketing to kind of communicate your values and tell the stories behind your food?
Yeah, for us, it's critical. And we're one of the businesses. So when we opened, I think using social media for marketing was still, I wouldn't say it was new, but it was younger. And so I think that was fortunate for us that I wasn't super active in it, but I learned quickly, because that's kind of one of the things you do when you start a business is you figure it out. So we didn't have a marketing budget, but my mom takes pictures like all the time, nonstop. And it was annoying as a kid. We all make fun of her and still do, but I inherited that quality. So also I'm really passionate about everything we do. So I enjoy documenting the day-to-day and the foods we make and the vendors we work with. So I feel like that combination of interest, experience, and then what was happening at the time allowed us to really use social media to tell people what we had going on. And then because we have a cafe, we make prepared foods, we have events, and we have our grocery, and we have such a variety of different vendors, we have a lot of material to share that's different. So we've really used it critically since the beginning. And then it's only been maybe in the last 2 years where, and I know a lot of businesses, especially our size, struggle with how to handle marketing. And for us, it was really hard. I really only hired somebody to help me with it 2 years ago, because it's hard to find someone that can tell your story and share your story the way that you want it to be shared without maybe hiring a big company, which might be prohibitively expensive, or just finding the right person. And so that's been a journey.
What advice would you give to someone who is looking to start a community-driven business like yours, especially in you know, a more challenging economic environment?
Yeah, I always joke when people ask us about when we started and how it worked. And I'll jokingly say, like, we were just really naive. We didn't know what we were getting into. And it was probably a good thing, because I think if we knew more, we would have been more hesitant or cautious about keeping on pushing forward. But so lucky for that, we just, you know, every challenge we just approached, and we never felt like we were going to drown. And, you know, COVID hit and that threw us for a loop. We got hit by a hurricane about a month ago and had to close for several days and got flooded. And that was really hard, but we had to push. And I think, so my advice, I feel like nobody realizes how much work it's going to be, and everybody feels like they can do it, but maybe not everyone. You may not want to. So I think just knowing it's going to be harder than you think, but also it's very rewarding. And so I guess advice would just be to prepare for anything and know that things are going to happen that you can't anticipate. And I think if you prepare for the worst, then you're ready to handle all the challenges that inevitably come your way. But it is fun. And I think if you're passionate about what you're doing, it's going to be easy to work 60 hours or 80 hours a week, because you also, you're having a little bit of fun. I mean, maybe not when you're like reading insurance policies and things, like that might not be fun to a grocery store owner, but all the other stuff, I think, makes up for those kinds of things.
And what would you say is some of the things, or one of the things that you love most about the natural foods industry as a whole?
I love so many things about it. I think we've been able, we're here every day, so we interact with so many customers, and we've had a lot of customers who've been really supportive, and they'll like never miss an opportunity to say thank you for what, for us, for being here. And so that's really nice. But we've also seen people, customers or even employees, change the way they eat. And we've seen the impact that can have on people's lives. So I feel like that in itself is like, it just can't get any better than that when you can see it. Because, you know, it takes a while. You don't just start eating better and immediately feel better. But we, being able to see it because of, we're here every day and customers come every day, that's probably the top thing. But I think when you go bigger and think about all the problems in our food and what's in our food and health issues, I think that makes us even, it's even more important that the transparency is there and that you can feel good about what you're eating. So there's just so many things that are important about eating and supporting natural foods.
And do you have any specific favorite local or unique products that you carry in your store that you want to shout out?
Yes. We will have a lot of interesting produce, and we talk a lot about the underdog vegetables that nobody buys, but we really love. So like right now we have Napa cabbage in season, and I love Napa cabbage, and I love making dumplings with them. They make a great dumpling, or you can stir fry it. But a lot of people don't know what it is. It's used in, I think, to make kimchi a lot. So I think a lot of Korean people will definitely like know Napa cabbage better than I do. But that's one of my favorite vegetables, and I tell everyone about it if they ask. Eggplants. Everyone knows eggplants, but a lot of people are scared to cook with it. So it's the intimidation factor. And even watermelon, our watermelon season here is fantastic. And we had a customer who's literally here every day. He told us once during watermelon season that it was his favorite fruit and he could eat a whole watermelon by himself, but he'll never buy a whole watermelon because he wouldn't know how to cut it. And so things, stories like that, make us like, well, I want to show you how to cut it right now because you'll never be intimidated again. But those are some of my favorite things. Citrus is here right now. And so we have Georgia Kisses. It's kind of like a little tangerine, easy to peel. Those are really delicious too.
Yeah, I feel like that's a big pull for people going to, especially small natural food stores. I feel like the produce is always fun. And I mean, delicious and usually better quality. And there's always something funky or fun to find. I feel like we didn't really touch on this earlier, but do you want to talk a little bit about the cafe that you have as well and just what you offer in there?
Yes. So when we started the business, it started with the grocery and our business idea that we wanted to have a one-stop shop for local food and natural food. And then it kind of turned into, well, there's also not a cafe around here that uses local ingredients and transparency. So it started out with that. And then we started just doing everything that was like, oh, well, wouldn't it be cool if we did this? And wouldn't it be cool if we did that? But our cafe is now a really bustling operation. And the coffee and the grocery in our store really complement each other because we buy from the same farmers and share the same sourcing principles. And so our cafe is able to do a lot with like buying all the lettuce from this farmer and all the tomatoes from that farmer and make a big impact on our local food community. And so we make hundreds of sandwiches a day. We make smoothies. We make coffee and espresso. It takes up probably about a half of our business.
Oh, wow. And I can also imagine the cafe is helpful with like using products from the store that are maybe damaged, going bad, using produce. Do you see that that has been a good lift in your business?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've definitely learned a lot over the years where like sometimes we'll spend like, you know, $30 in staff time to save $5 of tomatoes. And so we try to draw that balance. But I think we have a pretty good system for our scale of knowing what to save and then what not to save and what to donate. And we try not to waste at all. So like we compost a lot of stuff that can't be used anymore. We bake, I didn't even mention our signature thing is we have a cafe, but we also have a bakery where we bake all of our bread and a lot of all of our pastries. And so our signature thing is this Stecca bread, which is kind of like a baguette, but it's brushed with olive oil and salt. And it's one of the things we're really well known for. And even that, like if we have a lot of leftover Stecca, we donate it to a pig farmer and the pigs love eating old Stecca. So we try to find a lot of outlets for secondary products from our grocery to our kitchen. Like it kind of gets used everywhere it possibly could to avoid putting it in a landfill.
So something that really sticks out about your store is your focus on sourcing locally and prioritizing those local relationships. Do you mind expanding on that and talking about why this is a priority for Swamp Rabbit?
You know, we say our mission, but we actually like a lot of people will say they buy local when possible or when it works. We really, really go out of our way and buy. We have weeks where we have 500 individual invoices to pay because that's how many people we are buying direct from. Sometimes it's just like a few pounds of ginger from one farmer. And so I think it's really inefficient. And we joke like it's the most inefficient way you could possibly buy food. But I think every little step, sometimes it starts with just buying ginger from one farm, but then it grows, like maybe they'll grow cauliflower for us next year, or maybe they grow this. And so we've been able to like grow a lot of relationships with farmers through the efforts we put in the beginning. So that's really rewarding. So I feel like that's probably what sets us apart the most is just the, I would say, ridiculously ambitious when it comes to sourcing local.
Yeah, but also I feel like highly aspirational for others who are like, oh, I want to do that, but can I do that? You can.
Yeah. And then it's going to cost more and it's going to take more time. So it's hard. We understand why everyone can't just like throw themselves into it. But when the hurricane hit a month ago, every grocery store here was wiped out of milk and meat. And we had some farmers who had generators and they called and they checked in on us. And then they asked, like, you know, what can we do for you? And I said, when we get electricity, I'm going to call you. And what you could do is come here as quickly as possible. And our electricity turned on at 6 o'clock on Monday morning. And by 9 o'clock, our milk farmer was at our dock loading milk to our store. And that I feel like as much we put in so much effort to source these things and we're always questioning ourselves, how can we do this better? And I feel like local really showed its, I don't know, the community benefits for situations like that. That was really heartwarming.
That's what I was just thinking about. I think the local, the sourcing local, it really has, you have to rely on relationships, but it's more community driven. So in situations like that, you have a relationship with this person. So you're much more likely to have them help you out. And do you also feel that with Swamp Rabbit? Do you feel, you know, are you seeing the same customers every day? Are you seeing, you know, kind of your community come into your store and, you know, you kind of feel that?
Oh, Dad, definitely. Yeah, we're responsible for several marriages, and some of them are just customers coming here and meeting here. And because we have these community spaces, like a lot of moms or dads will come here with their kids and end up befriending other parents. So I think we've gotten to see that now over 13 years, and it's really rewarding.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Mary. Is there anything else you would like to share with our audience?
Well, you know, we're women-owned. Me and my partner are both women. We also, just interesting tidbits, we started having kids like when we started having the business. And so both of us have two boys, and like we just took turns having babies in the first few years. So that's kind of fun.
Thank you for tuning in to Common Roots. This episode has been made possible thanks to the hard work of Infra staff and Infra member contributors. To learn more about the retailers we serve, visit our retailer directory at naturalfoodretailers.com/retailer-directory.